One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, and welcome to Everything Is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. I am Talia Bacassis.
And I'm Kim France.
So a lot of you have emailed us asking for stories of reinvention. It seems like you all want to hear more stories of women who have done something big and bold in their lives. You want inspo, as the kids say. So today we have a super fun guest, someone who did something big and started stand-up comedy later in life. Our guest is Shalewa Sharp. And talk about inspo. Last year, Shalewa was named one of Vulture's 2019 comics to watch. She's joked on so many shows, festivals, and podcasts that in 27, Time Out New York labeled her a local fixture. She's been on HBO's Two Dope Queens, Comedy Central's The New Negroes. She's played in John Cameron Mitchell's musical podcast, Anthem Homunculus, and has two solo albums of jokes, and she is just fucking hilarious. Shalewa Sharp, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
All right.
That's good.
Yeah. So the reason we love your story is because you, one of the reasons, is because you started comedy later than most people. How old were you when you first got on stage?
I was 37.
Nice.
Yeah, I was 37.
And how old are you now?
I am 47. I'll be 48 in about a month.
So 10 yeah. years in comedy.
Yeah.
I just work with these people who make money, you know, like they make money. I mean, I'm doing fine. They pay me. I'm doing fine. Like when I go to Old Navy, I don't have to go straight to the back anymore. I can hang out in the front for a hot second. I can see the trends, you know. I could do that. But a lot of my coworkers are the kind of people that, like, when they go on vacation, they don't go to any place that's a proper noun. You know, if you ask me, hey, Shalewa, where are you going for your vacation? Oh, I'm going to Atlanta. I'm going to Los Angeles. I'm going to the Magic Mike show in Las Vegas. These things. But when you ask these people, hey, what'd you do over the weekend? Where'd you go? And they go, oh, I just went up to the house. Where's the house? In the country? Come on. I just went upstate. What state? Come on. What are you hiding?
What motivated you to start? Was it something that you had always wanted to do?
Yeah, it was. I wasn't necessarily someone who had big dreams as a kid. Like I didn't stake out the thing that I wanted to do. I remember being asked when I was, I don't know, like 8 or 9, what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, I want to live alone in a one-bedroom apartment. So that was really, that was kind of the dream. And I got there at about 26. So I was like, everything after this is gravy.
You peaked early.
Yeah, I did. But when I was around 15, I wanted to do comedy. I wanted to do stand-up. I'd been watching some stand-up. I was a little obsessed with late-night television, not necessarily for the late-night hosts or the comedy aspect, but because I didn't really grow up with cable, so all of the music videos that I wanted to watch came on shows that were late at night. So I got to see comedy just by trying to watch a bunch of music videos. And at some point, like right around 14 or 15, I watched, I think it was an Ellen DeGeneres special where she had a Fido Dido t-shirt on and she was doing comedy. And I said, I have that shirt. I could totally do that.
Everything else is the same.
Yeah, that's all it is. And I told my parents, I was like, I think I want to do stand-up comedy. And they were like, okay, sweetie. But I still didn't start it. It just never occurred to me to start in my 20s. What did I even have to talk about? And then at some point, it switched from what did I have to talk about to what right do I even have to talk about it? Whatever it is, who really wants to hear this?
How did you give yourself permission?
I started really just watching a lot of late night shows and concentrating on the comedy and then thinking, well, let me just do this once. It's a little morbid. My mother had a stroke when she was 46. And so when I started to approach 40, that was always on my mind. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let me just do some things before I have my stroke. And I was like, all right, I'll go ahead and try comedy. And, tried to figure out, okay, what goes in I got to write 5 minutes worth of jokes, I guess. And, all of that, like figure this out. And I did. I wrote what I thought was funny and what I assumed was a joke form. And went to an open mic night in Atlanta at a place called the Legendary Star Bar, which is just, one of your finest dive bars in the country. The whole place it's just built on a bed of nicotine. So I went there and did my jokes. I went with a friend. A friend had to drive me. I didn't have a car. And he was supposed to record me so that I'd had proof that I had done it at least once. Mm-hmm. As I was up there about halfway through, I looked over and I could see him and he wasn't recording. And I thought, well, man, like that's the whole reason you're here was for the ride and to record it. And then after that, I thought, well, that's fine because it looks like this is what I have to do with the rest of my life. So I kept telling the joke, but I also was mentally thinking like, all right, how do I adjust my life to continue to do this?
Because you loved it so much.
Yeah, like on stage during my first set, multitasking, trying to figure out how to do it forever.
When someone says to me, I'm allergic to gluten, what I'm actually hearing is, I make more money than you. Right? Because you can't be broke and allergic to gluten. You can be broke and shit a lot. But you can't be broke. That's not how money works. You can't be broke and allergic to gluten.
Sorry, you're basically a person who feels like you don't even know how to write a joke. And then you get up on a stage at a dive bar. Like, what did it feel like? Was it scary?
It was a little scary. I went a little bit earlier in the lineup. So people were, I thought at the time, I was like, well, everyone's being very receptive and very sweet. And it's probably because they're not really drunk yet. But I'll ride that wave. It felt great, actually. It was really nice to know that what I thought was joke structure was actually joke structure. Because I was just basing it on comedians I've seen and ways that I've told stories and things that I've read and how I would write essays and things like that. It was nice for that to be slightly validated. Like, oh, okay, I am, even though this is my first time, this is the right direction, whatever my gut instinct was in writing these jokes down and how I wanted to say them. It's the correct instinct.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about what you were doing before you took up comedy?
I was someone who just needed to work jobs to pay my bills. So, I was a retail person for quite some time. Like I worked in an independent record store for a number of years.
You know what? I was telling Tally, watching you perform, you kind of intimidated me a little. Like there's something slightly scary about you, and not in a bad way, and I kind of like stay away, you know, respect. But anyway, that's the same type of person I would expect to be working in an independent record store.
Or you're gonna love this. After the independent record store, I worked in an adult video store for like 6 to 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the same type of energy. Only, you know, with material that I'm not as familiar with as I am with music, but I get the gist of. But just having to put on that kind of attitude to deal with the customers.
I can't believe you worked in an adult video store for 6 or 7 years. Like, isn't that, I don't know, it just seems like it might be depressing.
It wasn't. And I think that is why I stayed for so long, because it could have been depressing. There are stores where the vibe of it is kind of depressing. But we had a really good crew of people there. Mm. So we kind of became our own little family. But it was a 24-hour store, which is wild. And it was like, you know, like a Blockbuster, except all the movies were dirty. And instead of snacks, it was, you know, like cock rings or something. And
I love the 24-hour aspect. It's like, I must go get a new cock ring at 5 a.m.
Right.
It's got to happen.
You know, it was well lit. It didn't feel like someone was coming in like a, you know, like a trench coat and glasses. Yeah. I mean, folks would come in like that and they would be annoyed because we would be playing music and joking and laughing. And they were like, this is serious stuff. And we're like, OK, buddy. You know. But yeah, so that's certainly what kept me there so long, was that my coworkers, they had good spirits. So we were all in good spirits in order to be there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it gives you real insight into the human condition, which is useful for stand-up comedy.
It certainly does. I've learned so much about people in that job, just retail in general, but definitely that particular kind of retail, just retail where it's extremely important to them. So I would say that music and porn are things that are so personal and so important to people. I started doing a one-woman show about working in a porn store because I never talked about it in my comedy. Mm-hmm. I was just like, it's too much. I can't just talk about it in 7 to 10 minutes. Like, it's a full hour.
Right.
And I did it recently, and a current coworker of mine saw it. And when she saw it at the end, she said, this explains so much about how you are, how you are. Like, why you react to things the way you do. And it's, I understand now. But yeah, I definitely learned a lot about people at that job.
Middle-aged women in comedy are not that common. Do you find people treat you differently because of it?
I've had some people say, don't tell your age. I've come across that a good bit, and I'm like, but I'm really happy with my age. Like, I'm proud to be at this point. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to necessarily return to earlier days, because it's not that I really went through it or anything, but there are lessons that I learned that got me to this point, and I wouldn't want to lie and have to pretend I didn't go through those lessons again. Also, my math is bad. I'm gonna forget like what the references I'm supposed to use are and things like that. But I kind of, whatever it is that I'm going through is what I talk about in my comedy. So lately I'd been talking about like what middle age means, because that's not something that's really like spoken about deeply. I feel like it's very surface. It's either,
and it's joked about in really predictable ways,
right? Exactly. But there are other things that you find yourself doing or picking up or letting go, and no one really speaks about that.
I once worked a job, and in the time that I was in this job, I lost both of my parents, right? So my mother passed away first. About a year later, my father died. So I had just come back from my father's memorial service, and one of my coworkers came up to me, and she said, wow, so both of your parents are gone. And I said, yes, unfortunately, that is the case. And then she said, man, don't you wish you had had kids so they could have known their grandkids?
When you have these conflicting feelings about moving into a new age where you're not necessarily expected to do some things because they're for younger folks. But when I'm in comedy, I'm surrounded by nothing but younger people.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just like, well, come on, how can you have that view? You sound like my mom. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like 2 years younger than your mom. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I sound like her?
Right.
You know, I mean, I have these moments.
I'm just, you know, I'm like at that weird middle age thing where like I get it, but I don't. You know what I mean? Like if you're 27 or younger, I don't get your references. Yeah. Sorry, I smile and I nod. I have no idea what you're talking about. What the fuck's an Adventure Time? Why do y'all keep going on and on about that? What is that?
I also talk a little bit about race.
No, really, seriously. Pro-black household. This is how pro-black my household was. Malcolm X was assassinated in February of 1965 before he was supposed to give a speech. My father was supposed to be at that speech. My father was not at that speech because he was running late. That is the blackest thing I've ever heard. Running late to a Malcolm X speech? Come on now. That is pitch. That is midnight. That is super black. That is shaft black. That's crazy. Hey, look, you know what? I don't want you thinking that I'm coming down on white women. I know I've said a couple of things. But nah, I love y'all. I love y'all. You know what? Shout out to white women. I feel like that's probably not said enough. Shout out to the white women. I saw you guys at the protests that were going on in New York. The Black Lives Matters protests, you know? And it was so heartwarming to see you guys using that oversized sense of entitlement for good. There is nothing like watching a white woman yell at a cop. Using the same tone of voice that she normally would be saying, oh yeah, well let me speak to your manager. Oh! Have my back, sister, have my back. I love y'all.
Your special, Stay Eating Cookies, was recorded in 2015, and it's so incredibly current. Like, it could have been recorded yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about Black Lives Matter, white privilege, Karen culture. How does it feel that, like, everybody is talking about the thing that you've been talking about for ages?
But it's nice to know that I wasn't going crazy when I was thinking these things, when I was seeing these things. And because sometimes I would say those jokes, and I would get the blankest looks. And I'm like, okay, so then is this just me? Am I the only one who's seeing this? And, you know, at the time that I recorded that, I recorded that album in, like, yeah, 2015. And I was like, I'm going to say them because these are funny to me. And I think people understand. So now to see kind of America's third eye opening is been very interesting seeing that happen, seeing the conversations happening from that, seeing the pushback to it.
Because it could have been recorded yesterday.
Yeah, it's so wild to see people kind of having these conversations and really like talking about it in a way where it's like, okay, so not only was I not being crazy about it, others are, and we are now educating those who were unaware. So that's kind of nice to see. Not that I necessarily needed the validation or justification, but it's nice to know that it arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So right. On a broader scale.
But some of your jokes are very harsh towards the Karens of the world, which is fair. But also I was trying to figure out, like, are you speaking to white audiences? Are you speaking to black audiences? Or do you not think of it either way?
I don't think of it either way, but I do end up in front of more white audiences than black audiences. So it definitely affects the response to the jokes. It may also affect the way that I phrase the jokes or tell the jokes. Like even with saying the joke about seeing white women yell at a cop with the same energy that they say, let me speak to your manager. When I would say that in front of Black audiences, there's a laugh, but it's a very knowing laugh. Mm. And when I say it in front of white audiences, there's a little bit of a shock, a pop of a shock, like, oh, I guess that is a thing that, huh, how about that? That is something
like
that
they each
do.
Recognize themselves, but then.
Yeah. Like, yeah, just from the opposite ends of seeing that.
Right.
So the laughter is a little bit different, but it's usually like a pretty mixed crowd for me, but probably more white audiences than Black audiences is what I've traditionally been in front of.
Does that affect what jokes you tell?
It affects how I want to approach different topics. Like, however I want to approach a topic, I try to think about what is it that I'm trying to say. And then once I kind of flesh that out, I take that in front of crowds and say it a few ways. I'll say it in a particular way in front of different audiences, and I can tell, like, oh, okay, some people don't understand what I'm going for here versus, all right, these folks do understand what I'm trying to say, what I'm getting at. With some of my dating stuff, when I talk about being older and looking up older Black men, and what that's like, when I say that it's basically just nothing but men messaging me, greetings, queen.
Yes, I remember that.
I see laughter, and then I wonder if everyone fully understands what I mean, that I am not knocking the Black men that do that, but that is something that happens at a particular age. For me, then, it's just like, no, yeah, young people are not doing that. That's definitely an older Black man thing. But I've gotten feedback where it's like, why are you making fun of Black dudes doing that? And I'm like, nah, they can keep it going. I love that they're doing it. But it also just reminds me that I have moved into the greetings queen demo. And that doesn't necessarily sit right with me.
I wonder what the white equivalent of greetings queen is.
Yeah, I don't know. Because there's the approach is just very like, look, I know the world is tough out here for you, queen, and I just want you to know right away that I'm on your side and right. I will take care of you. And I don't know if white women are approached like that because I'm not entirely sure that there's an understanding of the burden of white women by white men.
Right.
Whereas there is a burden of Black women that Black men will initially give lip service to. Now, whether or not they continue to give lip service to it, that will determine how many dates will happen after the first queen.
Right.
Because that can go away within like three exchanges. but I don't know how exclusive that is to Black women. But I know when I tell that joke to Black women, they're like, yep. yeah, that's a thing.
We're going to take a quick break for some ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to Everything is Fine.
Now, who are some of your comedy role models?
Comedy role models, I guess, would be like, I like Wanda Sykes. Janine Garofalo was the queen when I was really coming of age. So she for me was the one. Although I will say at the time, if you would ask me, who's your favorite comic? I would say Janine Garofalo. And if you ask me, do you think she's funny? I'd say, I'm just happy she's out there saying what she's saying. So I also enjoyed women comedians. I liked Elaine Boozler, Rita Rudner, Judy Tenuta, because she was nuts. And I was just like, is happening here? Male comedians, I like Dave Chappelle.
Well, wait, you actually wrote a critique of one of Chappelle's recent shows in Vulture.
I did.
Right, and to give listeners some context, I didn't actually see the shows, but Dave Chappelle did a show in which he made some very uncool and very unprogressive comments about trans people. I'm going to read a paragraph because it was so good. This is not a defense or endorsement of Chappelle. He's going to say what he wants to say, and I'm a comic, so my metric is usually, but was it funny? It's just, man, the 40s are such a forgotten age, you know? There's a great deal of hoopla about making it to 40, and then once you're there, it's like you don't exist. Nobody wants to answer your questions. They keep telling you to do your Googles. Next thing you know, you're at a gathering and you say something like, if you're not a gender, how will you know what to wear to your office job? And everyone will think, whoa, has this clueless old man been here the whole time?
Yeah.
That's the end of the paragraph I was reading. It was so good, listeners. You should just go do your Googles and read it. So tell us about how it came about from your perspective.
I wrote about what it's like to be in your 40s and doing comedy and people saying, you're out of touch. And it was for the most part based on my experience. And I said it even in the piece, just like, hey man, I'm no Chappelle. You know what I mean? I'm no Chappelle. But I do know what it's like to say something and people go, what? And you're like, oh, whoops, we don't do that anymore. you know, at some point it'll come for us all. And, you know, at some point I'm probably going to put out an album that's just like, what the hell are y'all talking about? Or whatever, you know, like, and that hopefully when I decide that I'm done attempting to keep my mind open, that I land in a good spot. That was ultimately what the piece was about. And then, you know, they put it out and my mentions was in shambles for the whole weekend. And then I think Bill Burr put out a special and everyone forgot. I was like, oh, well, that's good. I thought that was going to last a lot longer.
Do you think a male comic would have gotten the same reaction?
Maybe, but probably not. I feel like there were a few people who had written basically the same kind of thing or just trashing the special. And they may have been women, and I think they also got a great deal of grief.
Mm-hmm. When I got to like 6th and 7th grade, a few things changed. Boobs. We had to deal with that. Also, I made the decision to be in Camp Cindy Lauper, and I left the Madonna people behind. I'm so glad I didn't put money on that, because that's the beginning of, like, terrible choices. How could you? I was like, but she's just wearing underwear. I mean, Cindy Lauper's putting together magic. Do you see what's happening with the eyeshadow? I picked wrong.
A female comedian told a friend of mine that she can never wear anything that's even remotely sexy or even trendy on stage because she won't be taken seriously. Have you found that to be the case?
I know that is the case for a lot of women, for probably all female comedians. I know that that is a struggle. I think this is the biggest positive thing of starting late in life, is that I already had a sense of who I was as a person. And how I wanted to look and things of that nature. So if someone had a problem with how I looked, I was just like, yeah, you're coming at me too late, man. Like, I've already been through a lifetime of this, and this is kind of what I've decided on. So, yeah, there are definitely times where I may have worn something, and then I get home, and I'm like, this may have been, I don't know if that, maybe that's why I couldn't get their attention, because they were too busy. Maybe you could see my bra through the shirt or something. But for the most part, it's, this is a larger black woman. So I'm sure she's going to be fine if I yell, you go, girl, before she says a word. And I am not. I'm not going to be fine with that. So that was more of my issue than how I looked, because I had already decided on how I looked when I left the house. And I was like, this is good.
Right.
One thing I do... for the past few years being in New York, a lot of the shows I do are in Brooklyn. And so there's a lot more wiggle room on how you're looking on stage and things of that nature. And then when you take that spirit somewhere else where it's a little more traditional comedically, that's when they really kind of feel a weird pushback from the crowd. But when I started in Atlanta, and I started within a traditional comedy club, so I already got a sense of that kind of knowing that people were coming from small towns from far away and maybe don't show your toes unless they're painted or something stupid like that.
I know, but your look is so cool. In your special, you're wearing a cool dress. You have Converse on. You've got cool girl glasses. I don't know.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And that was I'll be comfortable in this. So I think that comes from starting at 37 as opposed to starting at 27. If I'd started at 27, oh my gosh, that would have been a nightmare. So bad. And it still took me longer to get to a sense of self clothing wise than a lot of other people, I think. So I was willing to play with a lot of things and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, by the time I started, thank goodness I was like, oh no, this is, I think, how I feel like looking.
Right.
But yeah, that is an issue because after the show, you may have to deal with, you know, folks coming up to you and wanting to talk and what they want to say. And that can also just be based on whatever it was you were wearing. And you'll find out when they say something to you and it has nothing to do with whatever you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, may usually start with, well, normally I don't like female comedians, but you reminded me of someone who you're nothing like. And then, but you're like a hotter version of, or you know what, if you, depending on how drunk some people are, you know, if you lost like some weight, you would remind me of, and yeah, people feel real free because you've just talked about yourself on stage.
Right.
Feel like, oh, all bets are off. I can talk about everything about you that you may have missed. Maybe you didn't, I don't know if you forgot to mention your pot belly, but I feel like I should go ahead and mention it now. Right. Let me just go ahead and tell you right now at the bar. So yeah, it can be a mess.
Yikes.
So like I said at the beginning, we have a lot of listeners who want to make a big change or reinvent themselves, but they feel like it's too late. And I have a friend who would love to do stand-up, but she just feels like she missed her chance. So why didn't you feel that way? And what would you say to somebody who wants to reinvent themselves and follow their dream later in life, even though I can't really believe I just said follow your dream?
Oh man, every time I think follow your dream, I'm like, who are you? What's wrong with you? There's got to be a better phrase. I think one thing is we're all kind of hyper aware of the dangers, and so that may keep people from doing things. So I think you may have to be a little dumb when you start. Not like dumb about how you go about it, but just dumb in that there may be doors that aren't open for you. Right now, we're very aware that there are many doors that are not open. But if you're kind of stupid about it, you're like, are you sure? Because I'm just going to walk through this door.
Right.
That's a little bit of what I didn't know, to be terrified of some things or to be scared of some things. I knew some things would be scary, but I didn't think that I shouldn't do it because of that element. One thing is to trust yourself and your gut and your sense of self and how you react in certain instances, because if you're starting something later in life, that means you've already gone through some shitty things probably.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the things that are forcing you to the life change, but just in general, we all have gone through some shitty things. So take that knowledge and that expertise and just kind of carry that with you, so that when you start the new, you know, when you start the new thing, it's not as terrifying because you've already been through some shit. You know, it shouldn't be as scary. Also, whatever it is you're deciding to do, I want to say make sure you love it, but you don't know until you start. You may not love it. And if you don't, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, definitely give it a try and see how you feel about it. And don't think that you're bailing if it's not what you want it to be, because it was just an option. It mm-hmm. wasn't, you didn't end everything so that you could start this. So if you need to bail, it's fine. You're the only one judging you on that. And everyone should be a lot nicer to themselves in that regard. So Don't think it's the end all be all, but definitely give it a shot. And if it's your friend who's starting comedy, there are going to be a lot of idiots who say things to you. They will mostly be male. They will mostly think that they're helping you out. A lot of them will be creepy. Just keep a blank face and go, oh, really? Okay, I think I'm fine. And keep it moving.
Mm.
Because they'll already be intimidated because you're a little bit older.
Because
comedy is just a bunch of young men pretending to be even younger men. Yeah.
Well, it helps. I mean, not knowing all of the reasons why you can't do something or it won't work out for you can actually be very freeing. So I think that's really excellent advice, to be kind of stupid.
Yeah. I'm hyper scared in enough elements of my life. I don't want to also do it in a thing that I enjoy.
Mm. Right.
Yeah.
So this is the part of the show where we normally ask people to like vamp a beauty product. But then, Kim, I was going to tell you. So in addition to the fact that Nell Scovell gave really good life advice, since my saying so many people love this feature, we've received a little bit of pushback on it, of people saying that maybe it's not the best thing to talk about a beauty product at the end of a long conversation that has nothing to do with looks. So my proposal is that at the end of the show, we ask people to recommend a beauty product, or if they want to give life advice, basically a life recommendation. What do you think, Kim?
I think that sounds really good, Tally. I could have predicted that we would get pushback about that. You know, it depends on the conversation. Sometimes it feels like an abrupt course change, and sometimes it feels like kind of fun digression.
Fair. So here you are. If you could give one recommendation for a thing or a bit of advice or a beauty product or whatever you choose, what would it be?
The advice that I have to kind of help you improve your life would be to make sure that your sleeping situation is as comfortable as possible.
Oh, like, God.
God. That's a real sore spot for Kim.
I've been having the worst insomnia, so.
Oh, man. It's something that I learned a while ago and then rectified and then moved to New York, like, 7 years ago, and I'm like, when have I had a good night's sleep since? And I'm constantly trying to figure, all right, well, is this the pillow? Or, you know, maybe I should just put my arms in the air and see if that helps. My sister came to visit me once and we were getting ready to go to bed, and I turned on a oil diffuser and some spa-like music, and she was like, okay, what is happening? And I'm like, I can't sleep. And she's like, all right, but then again, she needs to have cartoons on to go to sleep.
You've opened a Pandora's box of problems for Kim.
Yes. Well, there's an actual expression that always kind of amuses me. It's called sleep hygiene. Sleep hygiene, very important. And it's true. I'm a disaster on that front. Disaster.
Thank you so much, Shalila.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
How should people find you?
Oh, I'm on all of the social media that I can figure out at Silky Jumbo, all one word, traditional spelling, Silky Jumbo. And if you type that in, you'll probably come across me.
Perfect.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Everything is fine. We are your hosts, Talia Bacassus
and Kim France.
If you like the show, be sure to rate it and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. We're really grateful for the nice reviews. If you have suggestions for show ideas or anything else, email us at tallyandkim@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram that is EIF Podcast, and you can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.